So, but here we are. I think Senator Siebens here, and I don't think this will take too long. We heard your bill, or a lot of some people did, in the Commerce Committee, but we're here because of Subdivision 7, I believe, the enforcement part of it that deals with labor and industry. So if you could give the committee a brief explanation of the bill, and we'll go from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Members, this bill would begin to regulate or would regulate inflatable amusement rides, which are becoming increasingly popular in the state of Minnesota. And this bill is specifically tailored to just apply to the commercial facilities that that operate these rides. So it would not apply to rental, if you rent an inflatable amusement ride. And just to be clear, so members understand, what we're talking about when we say inflatable amusement rides are those things that kids like to jump on a lot repeatedly. So
just kids?
Right, kids or adults. So what we found, and this bill was brought to my attention by a mother from South St. Paul whose son went to a birthday party and was seriously injured when he was injured while jumping on an inflatable amusement ride. And so what we found was that Minnesota does not regulate these rides under Chapter 184B. I think the logical assumption was that they would be regulated similar to other amusement rides, but it is not the case. So what the bill would do would require that these commercial facilities register with the Department of Labor and Industry, that they have some mats or padding around the inflatable jumper equipment, and that there is insurance at the facilities, and that there is some training, or that there's supervision at the rides. So just for a little bit of background, 34 other states already regulate these in some manner. So I think this is a pretty moderate attempt to begin to regulate this industry. But we don't have any real firm statistics for how many injuries have occurred in Minnesota because there's no registration right now. But we know that the Consumer Product Safety Commission estimated that from 2003 to 2007, there were over 31,000 emergency room visits for these oversized commercial inflatable devices. So, Mr. Chair,
I mentioned we're just Subdivision 7, but we're also here for Subdivision 6 and 7, the registration and the...
Right. And, Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment, which I don't know if members have in their packet, but I was hoping that a committee member would offer for me. And this language was adopted in the House, and it was agreed, this new language was worked out between the insurance industry and the Department of Labor and Industry.
Okay, you worked this, this is in regards to insurance?
The department gonna speak?
And you've compromised this out or worked it out with somebody, insurance industry? Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And this language is just more consistent with what the Department of Labor and Industry, how other sections like
Senator
this are worded.
Senator Skoy moves the A4 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Anybody from labor and industry? Schultz, Mr. Schultz, would you address the committee for a minute or two and on Subdivision 6 and 7 only?
Chairman, committee members, my name is John Schultz. I'm an assistant director in the Construction Codes and Licensing Division of the Department of Labor and Industry. Did you have a particular question that you would like me to respond to, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, what? Why do we call you up here? You like this stuff? The language all right, workable?
Mr. Chairman, I did work with both authors to suggest some technical changes to bring it in, some consistency with other portions.
And that's been done.
184B.
And that's been worked out, so.
Yes.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A lot of times when people bring requirements of the department to the department, you guys complain about the cost. Is the $100 fee adequate to cover your costs associated with maintaining this registry, et cetera?
Schultz.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy, the fee is consistent with other similar registrations that the department has and actually consistent with the fees that are suggested in the department's fee bill that's moving through the legislature this year.
Mr. Chair, so you don't need to hire anybody or do anything like that. This will fit in your workload.
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoy, we'll actually use existing staff to administer this, not our administrative staff, but also our field people. We'll do investigating and the like as necessary.
Thank you.
Skoy. You're probably at some of these facilities for other reasons, too, though, aren't you? Anyway, or not.
Mr. Chairman, it's different than the other 184B facilities or entities, but we do have opportunity. Obviously, we've got people around the state. We do have opportunity to go to these sites in the normal inspection processes, so we've got multiple opportunities to visit these sites.
That's what I thought. Okay, any further discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Michelle.
Chair, more for the author. Just if you could, Senator Sieben, am I right that you're talking about the inflatables that, I mean, our kids get invited to parties.
Right.
An inflatable that the parents put up in the backyard. They rent it.
Mr. Chair.
That's a commercial.
And Senator Michelle, this just applies to the facilities that are commercial facilities. So places like Just Jump. Okay. Or Pump It Up. It does not, it explicitly excludes rentals. So if you would go and rent one in your backyard, you wouldn't be covered by this legislation.
Okay. That's
fairly narrow, but important. Senator Skoy.
Mr. Chair, I'll move that Senate File 1590 be recommended to pass and referred to.
To go anywhere else? Anybody ask for it, or is this floor material?
Mr. Chair, Judiciary would
judiciary.
Like to see it.
Oh, yeah, okay.
To the Judiciary Committee.
All right. On the Skoy motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion prevailed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
You're welcome. Senator Dibble. Senate File 2490, Green Economy Definition Modification to Include Concept of Green Chemistry. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think your reading of the title kind of explains what pretty succinctly what we're trying to accomplish here. Mr. Chair and members, as you probably recall from a lot of conversation we've had in recent times, we've course had the Green Jobs Task Force, and we've had a lot of discussion about kind of the emerging consensus in our state and country and larger about the opportunities that we have from an economic perspective and in getting a hold of the environmental issues that we confront and consumer and public health issues that we confront. Certainly, it means it's going to demand a lot more of all of us as individuals and our society and our economy, but there also lies a tremendous amount of opportunity. And in the Green Jobs Task Force, of course, we learned that when we're talking about the green economy, we're not just talking about renewable energy and energy efficiency products and the like, but we're also talking about just regular manufacturing and regular manufacturing processes and regular construction jobs and the like. Sometimes just you know, doing those sorts of things that lead to some more desirable outcomes, and sometimes really building into our existing manufacturing processes some of those opportunities to do things better, more environmentally sound, better for our health, and the like. An emerging area, and we did have some conversation about this in the Green Jobs Task Force, of course, is both the chemicals that we produce for consumer and industrial use, as well as the chemicals that we use during manufacturing process, and that's an emerging field known as green chemistry. We have some folks who can talk about what exactly we're the point that we're trying to make and driving to, and what exactly is happening in our larger economy. But before that, Mr. Chair, I think we want to kind of make the bill a little more efficient, take advantage of work that's already occurred at the legislature, maybe not have all of this language, because we already have some pretty good language in statute. So I do have an author's amendment, if someone could be so kind as to move that. It is the A2 amendment.
Okay, Senator Dibble would like...
And I can explain the A2. It simply takes advantage of green chemistry as already defined in state statute.
It just cleans it up. Senator Latz moves the amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Okay, we're adding green chemistry to the list.
Of the definition of what the green economy is, and that's a definition that we use in several places throughout statute when we're talking about different incentive programs, grant programs, and other sorts of programs.
I visited with Senator Dibble at length on this thing, and this really adds to the definition and clarifies one more area. So, I don't know, is anybody in the audience, did the chamber have some concerns about this, or anybody? You've worked it out.
Chair, yep. They articulated their concerns this morning, and in one of those lovely running negotiations through the halls, this is the language we came up with.
So you have been working.
Yes.
And this is agreed upon. Did you have some, I think we're going pretty good here. Do you have some brief comments from your witnesses as long as they're here? And or not, it doesn't matter.
If it'll help us, we do, and if it'll hurt us, we don't.
Any committee members? Senator Bonnet, do you wish to move this bill?
So moved.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members.
Wonderful witnesses today.
All right.
You guys are... Senator Bach, are you here? Yeah, he was a minute ago.
He was.
Senator Bach, we're ready to hear your jobs bill, Senate File 2568. Senator Bach, we've been working on this for a long time, and I...
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I have a delete everything amendment. It's the A2 amendment that I'd like to move. This is the first committee, so.
Everybody have it? It's in your folder. We'll, Senator Carlson will move the A8. Well, Senator Bach, I guess he can move his own amendment. Bach will move the A2 amendment to get the bill in the shape he'd like it in. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the bill summary in your packet is based on the delete all amendment. What is here, members, is the House companion to Representative Lincheski's jobs bill. The House has, I think, some different ideas than what the Senate has been working on. So this gets the bill in the shape of what the Senate has previously been working on. Article 1 is the language, the Senator Saltzman's language on the angel credit, the same language that this committee has already seen. So I'm not sure the committee's interested in hearing additional
testimony. Senator Bach, I think we've heard the angel investment thing at least twice here, maybe five times. So
It's Senator Saltzman's language. Article 2 is the CAPCO language. That's the same language also that this committee has heard. Article 3 is the historic building credit, and the bill summary is actually not right. The bill summary says a 25% credit. And I think, Mr. Chairman, I believe that's what you had in your bill was a 25% credit. What is actually the language of the bill is a 20% credit, which is what that's the amount of the credit that was in last year's Senate tax bill. So
Be a little more generous. 20% will work, though. That's fine.
I'm being a little more conservative.
Well, that's... I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
Lost for words, would you say? Yeah, okay.
And then there's some tax increment financing provisions in Article 4 that are very similar to what the House had in their bill, the compact development TIF language that was in last year's Senate tax bill. Some language related to economic development TIF districts that gives communities some additional flexibility during the recession until July 1 of 2011 to broaden the authority of economic development TIF districts. Senator Rest and Senator Scheid had a provision last year that increased the number of parcels that could be in housing replacement TIF districts. This does that and adds the city of Brooklyn Park that currently doesn't have that authority. And then the same is true for the city of St. Paul. Gives them, there were some provisions in 1995 that this, relative to housing replacement TIF districts for the city of St. Paul. Article 5 are the provisions that were in last year's Senate tax bill relative to the Mall of America, and then the repealer is related to the Mall of America. It changes, gives the city some additional room to some additional TIF authority relative to the mall, but only if the city decides to exercise it. So it repeals some more restrictive conditions that were in law originally when the mall was built. So, Mr. Chairman, it's kind of generally a tax bill. I don't have a fiscal note on it. I have one based on last year's. It's called a preliminary one. It shows that the tax credits, the angel credit's going to cost $15 million in FY11 as a tax credit. The historic building credit's going to cost $11 million in FY11. The total administrative costs for the bill are about $37,000. So that's the real cost outside of tax credits is about $37,000. I spoke with Senator Tomasoni about whether he needs to see the bill, and because it is the same administrative cost that you're going to find under the angel credit and the historic building tax credit that were in the previous bills that this committee passed out. So I've got a message in to Senator Cohen whether he needs to see it, considering he's already seeing the same provisions in the Saltzman and in your bill, Mr. Chairman, and I haven't heard back from Senator Cohen yet, but expect to hear back from him shortly.
Yeah,
that's the contents of a bill. They're all provisions that were in last year's omnibus tax bill that passed the Senate that we didn't get into law.
I think, Senator Bach, I think about two-thirds of the Senate, again, this year has seen pretty much this bill and the other provisions that Senator Saltzman and I have had in ours. So,
and I did talk,
this is nothing new.
I did talk with Senator Rest, and she said she doesn't want to see the bill. It doesn't have some of the green building provisions that you had, so there aren't local government issues in it. So my preference, unless I hear back from Senator Cohen, would be just to go directly to the tax committee as long as they're all tax credits.
Well, we could send it there and then see if he...
If Senator Cohen wants it, we'll send it back to him. But
we refer it on the floor if we have to.
I'd be surprised if for $37,000 he wants to see it. But
well, Mr. Chairman, I'm okay with not. I mean, I
see. All right.
I've seen your bill now 8 times.
You know, you even gave me a compliment. You said after 2 years, I understand the bill.
I think.
Was that a compliment?
I think you got it now. Yeah.
I'm not so sure that was a cop. All right.
Mr. Chairman, I should say that on the CAPCO provisions, I believe the maybe your bill and the Saltzman bill had $100 million in that program. This bill actually cuts it to $60 million, a little more.
$60 million,
a little more conservative, trying to get the program started. I think that, and I believe in last year's governor's budget, the governor actually had $60 million in his budget proposal last year. So it more parallels where the governor has been at.
I've talked to the people that I think are interested in this section, and I think that'll work all right. And once we get this thing going, it can always be up in a couple of years from now. But I think that's not a bad figure to begin with. And that doesn't cost any upfront money like the other? Like
all,
the
all out in – actually, it's beyond the 12 and 13 biennium. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd be remiss if I didn't thank you for all the work that you've done on this jobs issue last year and this year. And Senator Saltzman has put my thanks to her also. She's put an incredible amount of work with the people advocating for the angel tax credit.
This just briefly is a bill that, yes, a lot of people have been working on. I'd like to take credit for thinking it up in Bachwood, too, at Saltzman. But what happened, also the work was done by a group of about 100 folks, business people, labor people, got together and worked on it, Tom, or Senator Bach, a year and a half, 2 years.
Long time.
It wasn't just labor. It was just about everybody, some politicians in there. I don't know if that's good or bad. But anyway, that's
the angel, Mr. Chairman, I remember the angel credit's been around.
That one's been around.
The angel credit's been around a long time. I remember when Senator Langseth was the author of it once upon a time. Senator Sams was the author on it once upon a time. It's we've heard it in the tax committee for a number of years, and I know the advocates for it are probably getting tired of coming here every session. So I hope that this year we're able to be successful.
I think they, Senator Bach, my staff pointed out that CAPCO in subdivision 4, page 13, still looks like 100 million to me. It's us.
It is, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to amend it down to 60 because that's is that on page 13?
Yes.
Yep.
Line 13.14 and 13. On the motion to decrease.
That's not the understanding I had, Mr. Chairman. So I'd like to, if I could, move on lines 13.13 and 13.14, delete 100 million and insert 60 million. Okay. Maybe counsel can tell me if there's any other place in the bill where the cap is mentioned.
Right, we think that's the only spot. On the back motion to amend, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. All right, we're on the bill. Senator Monif.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bach, thank you for bringing forward, and perhaps this will be the year that this happens, and I certainly hope so, and thank you for your leadership. I was just curious if you might let us on the committee know the House position on the Mall of America issue, because wasn't that contentious? Did we ever reach agreement on that?
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonoff, I met with representatives of the mall this morning, and they've been working very closely with Representative Lincheski. The language that's in this delete all amendment is the language that's in the House bill.
Oh, good.
So they're coming to the Senate's way of thinking on this. I hate to jinx ourselves, but I think we're making some headway with the House relative to both the angel credit and the Mall of America provisions. I think we've got a little work to do on the CAPCO provisions yet with the House, but.
Good. Thank you.
Senator Saltzman.
On that point, Mr. Chair and Senator Bach, I do want to assure you that it does feel like the House is coming to our way of thinking, which is great. We met this morning again to try to, again, work on some of the issues, even within the angel language, that have raised some questions, so we even have a stronger bill, and we'll be sharing that with you. I think on the CAPCO, it's important to note that we have all the tools in our tool belt, and certainly the angel investor credit is really important, but the CAPCO is equally important to look at those companies that are further along in their development, and having this pool of dollars is absolutely critical to our success as a state. So I want to thank you for your work to carry this bill, and I really hope that we don't jinx it. I hope I am the last senator who has to work on this, in the future. But thanks to you and also to our chair for all of his work in really promoting jobs in our state. And I do know there is a person here to testify who has not been before this committee before from, I believe, Merrill Matrix. So if there was a chance to hear that, Mr. Chair, at some point, that would be great.
Sure. If he's short and he supports it.
I do indeed.
Mr. Chairman, I just did get word that Senator Cohen does want to see the bill, so probably won't go to Senator Tomasoni's division unless he asks Senator Cohen for it. But.
Sir, would you thank you for appearing before the Minnesota Senate.
Thank you.
My name is Robert Cohen. I'm president and CEO of Mirror Matrix Medical, which is the company that has recently been formed to commercialize the technology of Doris Taylor from the University of Minnesota, technology that in its ultimate form will allow us actually to make human organs, livers, kidneys, hearts, extraordinary technology. Most extraordinary thing I've ever seen in now a 30-some-odd-year career in medical technology. I am extremely pleased to hear your support for the Angel Tax Credit. It's interesting. I spent the first half of my career working for large medical technology companies, and the second half of my career and my entire 11 years in Minnesota working for smaller startup companies. And I can tell you that at any small company, and especially ours, I am employee number one, and I have recently hired employee number two. Raising money is the hardest thing we do. Developing the technology, marketing the technology, all the things that surround those kind of efforts, those are things we all know how to do, and those of us who have been in the business a long time know long before anyone else whether something truly will work or not. That becomes, in effect, an execution risk. Raising money is always a large question. For larger companies, 15 years ago, I've raised over $1 billion, took one company public on the New York Stock Exchange, and I will tell you, raising that $1 billion was easier than raising the first $50,000 for an early-stage company. We are going through every possible effort to make sure that this technology of Doris Taylor's from the University of Minnesota stays in Minnesota, because much as the medical device industry, in my mind, really started here 40 years ago with Dr. Lillehei and with Earl Bakken and all the known players, I think we have the chance to spawn a whole new industry for Minnesota. And I would argue that had we had the current investment climate in the United States and locally 40 years ago, the medical device industry may never have gotten off the ground, or at least not gotten off the ground locally. There are local investors, I think, who would like to step up to the plate, but who very much need the incentive of this bill. And probably the most interesting calls I've gotten in the last few weeks have been actually from the state of Wisconsin. And the only reason they're interesting is because everyone who calls from Wisconsin thinking that they somehow can lure this company across the river starts with basically their angel tax credit. I've heard more details about that than, frankly, I care to in a lifetime. But I think this will be a very positive step for Minnesota and for keeping local technologies here. I enthusiastically support it, and I very much would like to be of help in any way I can, both in keeping our technology here and in continuing to support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Nice job. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, would like to thank Senator Bach for bringing this up and also the work of Senator Saltzman on this. But I also just want to relay a little story. I was cleaning out my bookshelf the other day, and I found the Governor's Bioscience Council book, and it came back from 2003. And that thing is about this big, and all the information. And Senator Kelly and myself sat on that council, and to look at where we started from 03 to where it's at right now is really tremendous. We didn't have a clue what was the wealth that we had in this state as far as bioscience industry, and it's been very interesting. So I also like to thank the department, indeed, for the work and for the governor for what they've done. And I've been the author of these bills several times in the past, and it's really comforting to see that we are moving forward in this area and that we're all on the same page. And I just want to say it's been a long time coming, and I looked at that press release and my old picture. And I'm like, whoa.
Well, Senator Bach and others and Saltzman and worked very hard with the administration and the governor's office, deleted some stuff and collaborated what we can do and why go through the motions if we're not, you know, then, and not to mention the work he's done with the House folks over the year. They weren't buying in, and now we think we've got him on board. Senator Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to say thank you to the CEO of the of Doris Taylor's entrepreneurial efforts. I'm not sure I can pronounce the name of the company, Mirror Matrix. The newspaper article announcing the arrangement did not specify where the company was located. And I read the article twice to find out if it was a Minnesota company that was getting the license from the University of Minnesota. And I just want to acknowledge that it is and congratulate the university and the company for that. And it is my fervent hope that you remain in Minnesota for the lifetime of that company and the technology. Thank you.
Very good. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have a question for Senator Bach on Article 4, Section 1, Sections 1 and 3. We're talking about establishing the new compact development districts for TIF. And on Section 3, it talks about the specifies the compact development can have a 25-year duration. Is there any allowance for any retroactive classification? You know, if you recall, we were very interested in extending one of the TIFs out in my area there. And is there a mechanism that we can take advantage of that additional 5 years?
Well,
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, the House has been very slow to come around to this compact development TIF idea. And just kind of, I don't want to get too far into tax jargon, but it really is kind of an anti-sprawl provision. It creates a new kind of TIF district for redevelopment where a developer will take a parcel of property, tear down what's existing there, and as long as they build three times the square footage on that same footprint, it allows it to be a tax increment project. And the argument is to try and keep redevelopment projects in the urban core at some kind of competitive situation versus a piece of green property out in the suburbs, because it's much cheaper to build out in the suburbs, and that's what's causing some of our sprawl. It's just cheaper to build on a green field than to buy some existing buildings, tear them down, and prep the site for development. So that's how it works. The House has been real slow to get there, and you'll see, if you look at Section 2 in that article, they're suggesting we try this and that the authority to enter into one of these compact development TIFs expires on June 30th of 2012. That's a House provision that they insisted we have in here. So it's just a little trial balloon. I can have a discussion with Representative Lancheski about doing something beyond that. But right now, today, I'm just pleased that they're even willing to put the words in the article because we had quite a long discussion about this last year in Tax Conference Committee, and they were unwilling to go there, but we're making some incremental headway, I think, Senator Carlson.
Mm-hmm. Well,
good. And Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, I just want to make sure that we remember that we've made a green field out of a neighborhood there. We need to somehow take care of that and go back to another neighborhood.
Well, they weren't listening. We're crawling here before we run, I guess, and get a bite of the apple, Senator Carlson. We'd like more, but this has been a very tough fight. Senator Bach, any further questions? We need anybody else wish to testify for or against the bill? Senator Bach, we could take a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate File 2568, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Finance.
Okay, discussion on that motion. Seeing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
Thank you,
Senator Bach. We're going to hear for a few minutes from Deed on the uniform accountability measures. Mr. Loftus, are you here?
I am.
Okay, good. And Deb Serum, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Mark Loftus with Deed. With me is Deb Serum, also from our department. We thought we'd take a few minutes to give you an update on a bill that passed last year. Senator Senjum was the chief author here in the Senate, and
thank you.
Set in motion the ability for us to have clearer measures of performance across a variety of programs, and I will give just kind of the background on this, and Deb will speak to more of the details. But as you recall, the discussion last session, we did not have language which would require uniform standards across the department, and the provisions which passed gave us and our grantees and the people that we provide funds to the responsibility to help all of you and help our department have standard measures so that we can make better decisions about recommendations of funding and also recommendations of times when we might have to cut recommended funding. So it's never going to be possible to compare everything across all the programs, Mr. Chairman, but we are hopeful this can get us a lot closer to having similar measures for the similar kinds of programs. So I'll turn it to Deb, and she can talk to some of the specifics of our proposal.
Thank you, Mark.
And I'm Deb Serum, as Mark said, from DEED, and just want to give you a real quick overview of what is in the accountability
Ms.
measures.
Ms. Serum, if you could move the mic closer to you. Yes, we want to make sure everyone can hear.
Okay. I don't always speak very loudly. Just wanted to give you a quick overview of what the accountability measures is, and to remind you, I guess, that last October the proposal was submitted, and now we're working towards the first report that's due the end of the year. So in going through your handouts there, I guess to give a little bit of background on the development process, what we've done so far to get where we're at. First of all, we just simply had to inventory all the programs that DEED operates and all the pass-throughs. That was kind of the new piece to this. And then once we had the list of all the programs that were to be included, we then went through and made sure that we had all of the mandates, the missions, the stated purposes. We understood what the programs were all about. Then perhaps the most important thing, though, was to convene work groups. We worked with several staff within the department that were the program experts and also met with all of the pass-through programs and providers so that they were a part of the process. And I think in this work, what we really held strong to was that we wanted to come up with something that was useful to you as decision-makers as well as our own leadership in their decision-making capacity. We felt very strongly about that we wanted this to be a collaborative process. We didn't want this to be something we were doing to the programs and pass-throughs. And we really wanted this to take this opportunity to explore measures, the possibilities of things we could do, and honestly to generate a little bit of excitement. Once we had this inventory, though, it was quite clear that we really couldn't compare all of DEED programs side by side. We operate everything from a displaced homemaker program to a sewer abatement program. Well, you know, there's really not a lot of comparison amongst some of those things. So we separated the programs into what we called buckets of similar purpose for the programs, and that's on the fourth page of your handouts is the various different buckets that we came up with. And certainly some programs fit in more than one, but we tried to put them in what their primary purpose was. The exact listing of that is in the proposal that was submitted in October. Once we understood more about the programs and what their purpose was, we also knew that we had to provide some context to those programs. Even within, for instance, the job retention or job attainment bucket, there is really quite a range of various different programs there. So we needed to be able to understand the characteristics of the people who are in that program, whether it be the individuals or the communities or the businesses. And then we also operate a broad intensity of services of programs, some being pretty much self-service. We have publications available. We have information on the website. We operate a fair amount of programs where we have a significant amount of staff intervention, some sort of a case management or consultation kind of role, and then there are programs where we invest significantly in either training or development or whatever. So, you know, you'd expect very different outcomes from those programs as well. Then we finally got down to what is the measures framework, and on page 6 it talks about what that is. And what we really propose to do is answer these questions on all the various different programs within their various groupings. So looking at what is the program's purpose, what is the program's resource, who does the program serve, what does the program do, and then what are the results of that program. Again, we're trying to have common information to all of you decision makers so that you can make data-driven decisions. Then moving into...
Ms. Sarum, just to make sure that everyone is following along here, we have two pages per page. So when you say page six, we are on through page three.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, and I've got the one with the notes on it, so sorry about that. The one I just talked about said measures framework, and now moving into the phased implementation. The first report is due the end of this year, but we just really got the instructions to do this. So for the first year, what we're really creating is sort of the baseline for future reports. The first report will certainly include all of the programs, but it will talk about more of the context, the input, and the output. We'll be working on 6 months' worth of data, so program information starting January 1st of this year through the end of June this year. And then there also was language in the bill about doing some sort of comparisons with people who are in programs and who are on unemployment insurance or are in the Minnesota Family Investment Program. And for this first year, we're really just going to be comparing the data sets of our programs and either UI or MFIP to see how many people really are in both. And then we'll use that, establish a threshold, and do further analysis in subsequent years. So then for the 2012 report, we'll keep adding on to what we did for this first report. 2012, so that we have as many data sets, data points as possible, we'll really be producing 2 one-year reports. We'll be adding in outcome measures as we can, and I guess maybe a note on that is that outcomes typically happen a fair amount of time after a service is delivered or a person is served, a minimum of 2 quarters, more likely 8+ quarters. So we'll be adding outcome measures in as enough time has elapsed to be able to calculate those outcomes. And then we'll also do deeper analysis of the participants who are on MFIP or on UI and in a program to see if there is a difference in duration of how long they're on either any of those programs if they're in multiple programs. And then 2014 would be the next report that's due. We'll continue refinement. In our experience, we found that once you start looking at data, once you start asking questions, it kind of begs more questions, so we'll keep refining as we move forward. And then we should also be able to then look at the MFIP and UI population, see how the cross-participation in another program, how that speaks to recidivism. And then on to... we can give you a couple quick examples of some things that have already occurred because of our work in this, and maybe Mark has the one on small businesses.
Madam Chair, I'm looking at the slide that is entitled Examples of Uniform Measures, Small Business Services. As you all know, for many years we've funded through our department the Small Business Development Center program. There's state funding in that. But we also have a variety of other small business service programs. In our department, those include Women Venture, MEDA here in the Twin Cities, Enterprise Minnesota, the Minnesota Inventors Congress, and the River Bend Entrepreneurial Facilitation Program. We've got all these programs that are providing services to small businesses in a variety of ways, but we haven't had a good way to measure all of their results consistently. So we've worked with all of these organizations and our small business staff to come up with a standard, in effect, a survey instrument of their customers so we can get data back and kind of generate results and reports from that consistently across the six different organizations and types of services. So it'll never be perfectly comparable across all of them. You know, if you talk about the clients of Women Venture, that's going to be different than the clients of Enterprise Minnesota. But you can start to see trends over time and say that for this amount of money, this organization produces these results compared to what this other organization is able to accomplish. And we think that's going to help us as a department and hopefully you then in looking at funding and programs to make better decisions, as we hope we can make better decisions about who's accomplishing what and what results do you get for the money. So it's been a good exercise for us at the small business area because all the parties are working together on that effort. So,
A couple other real quick examples of things that have already worked out well in this is we operate many different kinds of youth programs and with, for very different purposes, but looking across all of them, it appears that they all can measure and are interested in looking at a work readiness credential, the attainment of that amongst the youth. So that's a plus. And then for the employment-related programs, the pass-throughs have never had access to outcome data before, so they're just quite tickled to finally be able to see what's happening over time to the people that they've worked with. So just a couple of examples of wins already. And then on to what should be the last page, an example, I guess, or a listing of a couple reports that we already produce that start to speak towards what this accountability measures is. Annual program summaries is something that we've done for many years, and it lists every program that DEED operates, and it briefly describes what the program is, who it serves, what it does, and then a short trend of measures and appropriation. And that is available online. The current year's, the 2009 data is live already. And then we, more recently, but still for the last several years, we've created legislative district profiles where we take services from our various different programs and break them out by Senate district. So you can see, for instance, how many businesses were served in your community and what kind of money we put out through those business services. And that's available online as well. The 2009 data should be out there this week. We've had a couple of glitches in that one, but that should be out very shortly. And that's our quick summary. Thank you very much, and if you have any questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Serum and Mr. Loftus. Are there any questions from the committee members? Report. It's always helpful to see how we account for and measure some of the success of these programs and also evaluate them. And so that's been very, very helpful to have this information. And it would be, I think, helpful to see the legislative districts because it does bring all of this home as to who's being served by these districts or these programs as well. So any other questions? All right. Do we have a hearing on Wednesday? And we will be covering, we have bills. So we will be meeting on Wednesday. We have a number of bills to go over. So at this time, meeting adjourned.